You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Right now I could use a vacation. I wish it was Sunday.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I don't know. I don't know how much of a Sunday fun day it is, but we do like to call this show Sunday Fun Day. Anita Marks with you for the next 3 hours on this Sunday morning. Joel is producing the show back in the studio. Good morning, Joel. How you doing, my friend?
Doing excellent. Great to be with you, as always.
Yeah. We were talking about it, you know, before we started the show, like, you know, the show opened. Are we playing the Sunday Fun Day? It's hard. I mean, we understand we're in the middle of a pandemic. On top of that, weather's not so great outside today. I don't know how fun Sunday's going to be, but hopefully for the next 3 hours, we can make it a little bit more enjoyable for you. This is what we have coming up on the show. Obviously, we're going to get into some Yankees talk right now. So jump on board, all you Yankee fans. A lot to discuss. 800-919-3776. We'll hear from Booney as well. Ryan Rucco was on the Michael Kay show. So we've got some Yankee sound that we're going to play for you, and hopefully we can generate some really interesting conversation when it comes to the Yankees and what they're going through right now. Also in this hour at 9:30, David Hale is going to join us. Let's talk some college football and where that stands right now. The latest is that 9 Oklahoma Sooners have tested positive. Now apparently their coach had said that they were once they realized that their season start time was going to be pushed back till the end of August, he let the players go home for a period of time. So these are players that didn't necessarily contract COVID-19 on campus. These are players that were allowed to leave and go home, and they came back, and now they've got 9 players that have tested positive. They're in the midst of doing their contact tracing, and they're hoping that they can limit this. Apparently, 75% of the team decided to stay on campus. So you're talking about only 25% of their team left, and out of that 25%, now 9 have tested positive since they've returned from the break. Brian Hanline, and I hope I'm pronouncing that properly, was on CNN. He's the NCAA chief medical officer, had some interesting things to say on CNN. I believe it was yesterday or last night, pertaining to some of the decisions that just recently were made in college football. And also big news out right now about a new saliva test. Joel and I were talking about in the break. I have not had the brain tickle yet, but I know several people who have. And I heard it's not pleasant. And I'm very transparent. Like, I'm a wimp when it comes to stuff like that. Like, I go, I have really good veins, you know, like, you could, like, my veins like pop out of my skin. So, when somebody does take blood, it's like, I don't have a nurse who's sitting there like trying
to
find.
You're a nurse's dream, basically.
Right, yeah. I don't have anyone in there like trying to find the vein. Like, a lot of times they don't even have to like wrap my arm to make the vein pop. So I'm very fortunate that way, but I still can't stand needles. I don't like giving blood. I'm a wimp when it comes to that kind of stuff. And so I have been dreading the brain tickle. And so now with news that the FDA has approved the saliva-based test, which, by the way, let's give a huge shout out to Rutgers. Both Rutgers and Yale were a part of producing the saliva-based test that now has been developed. The FDA has now said A-okay to it. And also, let's give a huge shout out to the NBA and the NBAPA because they funded this research and help this development of the saliva test. And it's called saliva. Thank you. I know that you went to Rutgers, Joel. And the test is called Saliva Direct. And the great thing about it is that it is only going to cost us anywhere between $15 to $20, which is great because the other test, from what I understand, was somewhere in the realm of $75 to $125. To get our brain tickled, and the test results you get back within 24 to 48 hours. And this saliva test has been a test that has been utilized in the NBA. So anyway, I kind of wanted to share that with you and fill you in, because, you know, what we're being told is the decisions that are being made by some of the big power conferences to not play this fall is a few reasons. Number one, you know, lack of the ability to test as frequently as they'd like. Right now, college players are only, and I say only, being tested once a week as opposed to every day. And also, you know, the study and the reports that even though these young athletes are asymptomatic, there is a percentage of them that are developing these heart conditions that very well could derail their long-term career trying to get into the NFL. So anyway, David Hale is going to join us to talk some college football. And also, I know a lot of folks are getting ready for their fantasy football drafts. I don't know about you, but like, I'm already getting the emails, you know, hey, this is when we want to have our draft. Are you ready? Are you ready to draft? What date suits you? So you know anything about me, you know, I'm in 12 leagues, probably 13 this season, because some firefighters who live on my block have asked me to play in their fantasy league. And of course I said yes. Finally, after 10 years, I said yes. So I'm probably looking at 13, maybe 14 leagues this season. So that's a lot of fantasy football drafts. Mike Clay from ESPN is going to join us at 11 o'clock. That's appointment radio for all you fantasy football freaks out there like me, trying to get ahead of your draft, your cheat sheet. Also, another thing I want to talk to Mike Clay about, he's absolutely brilliant. Another thing I want to talk to Mike Clay about is, you know, for commissioners out there that are commissioning fantasy football leagues, like, what should change in regard to roster, number of roster, like how many rounds should we have? How many players should we have on the bench due to the fact that the NFL is about to embark on a season and play during a pandemic, COVID-19. So, you know, how should that work? Because, you know, like, you know, obviously, as you know, in a moment's notice, you could have a number of guys in one team be inactive for a game on Sunday. And so, you know, what if your ad drop, that's another thing. Like, I can't stand playing in leagues where you don't have the ability to go in there and ad drop as many guys as you want on Sunday. That's going to have to change. There's some rules that are going to have to either change or be put in place from another number of fantasy football commissioners and how to navigate through a fantasy football season during COVID-19. That's just going to happen. So it's going to have to happen. So something I'm going to talk to Mike Clay about. Preston Johnson joined me earlier this week on Friday night on our gambling show, Week in Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports, and gave us some insight on where his money is going to roll on the NBA playoffs that kick off on Monday, which by the way, the Nets, they tip off at 4 o'clock against the Raptors. Monday, 1:30, Jazz and Nuggets, 6:30, the Sixers and the Celtics, and 9 o'clock is the Mavs and the Clippers. But probably another really big storyline is the fact that Portland beat Memphis yesterday, 126-122. So now they advance to take on the Lakers. The Lakers with the one seed, Portland the play-in game. And be careful what you wish for. I don't know if that was if that's the easiest matchup. I would imagine how great Damian Lillard has been playing, and definitely the MVP of the bubble. Portland went 7-2 in the bubble. Lillard put up one game that he put up over 60 points, I think 61. He's just been magical in the bubble. Not sure if this is going to be the easiest first round matchup for the Lakers, but I'm sure it will be a good one. So we'll dive into some NBA talk as well. And we'll take your calls. I know we've got quite a few that are on already. 800-919-3776 is the phone number. Anita Marks with you. Joel producing the show back in New York. When we come back, let's dive into the Yankees. Another Yankee player goes on the IL. Even though they destroyed the Red Sox last night, 11-5. They're now 14-6, 8-1 at home. But are we looking at another next man up season like we saw last year? And I guess my question is 800-919-3776. You know, last season, as we know, the Yankees won 103 games without Stanton in Judge being active and attractive in a lot of those, you know, is it realistic for Yankee fans to expect the same this year, a much different year, a shortened season, an extended playoff season? How does that play into maybe what the Yankees would like to do, but can they accomplish as we get closer to the trade deadline?
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I've been pretty vocal in saying that I think we need a commissioner of college football. It's the NCAA's in one spot right now, and the AFCA really isn't. They don't have voting power, and the commissioners aren't all on the same page, and I'd rather see everybody on the same page. I just think it would be better because we all had chances to come back at different times. We all are handling things differently by conference. Even the medical protocol is different in one conference as compared to another.
That is Mack Brown, and I couldn't feel that he's more right. David Hale joins us now, covers all things college football for ESPN. David, appreciate your time this morning. Hope all's well. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, and I'll be the first to cast a vote for Mack for commissioner of college football because I'm with you. He's 100% right about this.
So David, I'm going to share with you. I did a lot of filling in this past month. So the past 2 weeks when all this has been going on, I've been on the phone with a lot of NFL scouts who, as you know, are very well connected with college coaches and ADs and whatnot. And all of them are telling me the same thing. This is political. Look at the conferences. Look at the teams. Blue state conferences are saying we're not going to play. Red state teams are saying we're going to move forward. This is all political, not to say that they don't care about the health and safety of these young men. But at the end of the day, we have an election before us, and this is really political. Are you hearing the same thing, David?
You know, I would argue that in this day and age, everything is political to an extent. So I think there's an inherent amount of that goes on here. And part of it is just sort of like, you know, your view of how best to handle this situation, which let's be clear, there is not a perfect answer. Nobody has the quote unquote right answer right now. There are probabilities and degrees of risk you're willing to tolerate and all of these things that go into this formula of coming up with a solution. But your approach to that solution, I would agree, is being largely dictated by, if not politics, certainly by the culture within the area that you work. And, you know, I don't think it's a huge surprise when you look at it geographically that north of the Mason-Dixon, there's only a handful of players playing playing, and west of Texas, there's none. That speaks a little bit to our political divide in the country as well. By saying it's political, I think there does sort of inherently bring about this idea that no one is concerned about the safety of the kids. I think that's probably an oversimplification, but the fact of the matter is, you know, look, if you go to a town like Tuscaloosa or Athens, Georgia, or Clemson, South Carolina, college football is life there. I mean, it is not just this fun sport to watch on a Saturday. It's inherently political because it is such a massive part of the very fabric of those towns. And in some cases, those entire states, we're talking about Alabama and Georgia and South Carolina. So it's almost, you know, to some extent, it's impossible to separate the two.
Again, David Hale joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Today news, 9 Oklahoma Sooners players tested positive. Right now, they're in the process of contract tracing. And this was because they returned from break. This wasn't an outbreak that happened within the team. During practice, these are players, apparently like 25% of the team left to go home and came back. And so, you know, how much is that storyline going to play into, see, as we heard Nick Saban say before, these players are safer here on campus.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I think that some of the coaches that are saying this are saying it as sort of a sales pitch, yes. I think there are plenty of guys who would be perfectly safe not playing football. But to that point, I mean, this is sort of, you know, the big picture umbrella idea of the morality of college football that has been pitched for a long time. And a lot of it is sort of BS, but some of it is true in that the structure of college football and what it affords you in terms of education, in terms of physical health, and just, again, simple structure within your life is important to a lot of guys. That when that's removed, they really don't have a foundation to work from. I don't know what the percentages are there. I'd be utterly guessing to say so, but it's certainly not zero. There are guys who, you know, college football is the thing that keeps them, for lack of a better term, on the straight and narrow. And I think you see this exacerbated within a time like this, with this pandemic, is that all of these, you talk to any one of them, they're all saying, we know, our teammates know, everybody's aware, we all know what the risks are, we're all in this together, pulling in the same direction to make sure we have a season. And then, you know, you let them go for a week, and that's not what happens. And it's not even, you know, Louisville punished some soccer players and dismissed them from the team for holding a party that allowed COVID to get into some of their athletics facilities. And I think that's probably excessive. You know, it's not like these guys are bad guys for necessarily being exposed. A lot of people with good intentions who have largely practiced very good distancing policies have still managed to get exposed as well. But it does sort of underscore the fact that, like, the bubble has to be very, very small, and it's impossible to have a small bubble outside of the world of effectively that college football facility.
Brian, is it Hainlein? The NCAA chief medical officer, okay, I am pronouncing that properly, was on CNN. This was a quote: right now, if testing in the U.S. stays the way it is, there's no way we can go forward with sports. We're not in a place today where we can safely play sports. He said that on CNN. But some news, some positive news in regard to the saliva testing that the FDA has given the okay on. Yale and Rutgers apparently created this saliva test. They're calling it the Saliva Direct. Won't be that expensive for, those of us who don't play sports. And the test will be available between in 24 to 48 hours. How much does this saliva testing change that narrative?
Yeah, first of all, can we sit back in astonishment that it might be Rutgers that saves college football?
Okay.
Rutgers is going to play college football, right? But to your point, I think, first of all, I think Brian Hainlein's comments on CNN are timed purposefully to sort of shine a light on that, the news about the saliva testing. Look, this would be, in my mind, a huge game changer, which is not to say it is a magic bullet. It is not. But let's look at what the real problems have been so far. First of all, cost. I mean, there's a big reason that FCS and Division II and Division III teams have shut down, and while a lot of it is safety, a big thing is cost. They just cannot afford the type of testing. The SEC teams that are planning to test three times a week during the season, based on averages for what I've heard for the cost of testing, I mean, you're definitely talking into the millions for these just basic testing protocols. That's a budget breaker for a lot of schools. So budget-wise, this is huge. The turnaround time is also huge. So this is, you know, part of the problem, I think, when Dr. Hainlein talks about testing being an issue, is right now the protocols, so let's take the ACC, for example, they're asking for once-a-week testing. I think that's clearly too little, and a lot of teams are already planning to do more. But that once-a-week testing has to be done within 72 hours of kickoff. Well, all right, you test somebody on a Thursday morning. By the time you go to play, say, Saturday night, there's a lot of interactions that they might have had in that interim. So there is certainly, just because they tested negative from that test on Thursday morning, does not mean they are lining up across from another player on Saturday night definitively negative for COVID-19. And so the turnaround time and being able to get results and the ability to test more frequently is huge. It is, again, not a panacea. It doesn't fix everything. The virus is still out there. The test just tells us whether you have it or not. It doesn't do anything to actually combat the virus. Those are still big problems. But I think when you talk to some folks around the SEC and the ACC, they'll point to this and say, why did the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have to act so early? Not that they acted improperly, but the decision to cancel sports for the fall a month or more out, when we have a potential breakthrough like this coming that could drastically impact the ability to play sports, this is sort of the reason why they want to wait. No one in the ACC or SEC that I've talked to has said, we are 100% going to kick off football this fall. They're saying, we're going to keep marching forward until there is a definitive reason not to. That might not be the right case, but or the right decision. But when you see something like this happen, I think it does sort of underscore the rationale for why you hold off a little bit longer.
Again, David Hale joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. So, you know, David, and again, in talking to a number of the scouts that I have this week, NFL scouts, that is, none of them feel that a spring season is realistic. Like, not one of them is saying that that spring football is going to happen. So is that safe to say that, you know, the guys in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the MAC and Mountain West, that they're not going to play this season? What are you hearing? What are you being told?
Yeah, there's an old Stephen Wright joke that says everywhere's walking distance if you have the time. And that's sort of how I feel about this. Like, you could play spring. It's possible. But all of the things that have to be sacrificed in order to make that work, it feels like it is not a worthwhile endeavor. A lot of the talk at this point, I feel like, is sort of generated around, we don't want a bunch of our guys transferring. We don't want to lose a bunch of recruits. We need to keep hope alive. And there's you know, a benefit to that genuinely in the mental health aspect of players. And again, keeping them focused on the task at hand and not just saying, well, we're not playing football this year. Let's go to a bunch of, you know, frat parties and be exposed to COVID. So, you know, I don't think it's entirely disingenuous. I think there are certainly a lot of coaches and players who want to find a way to make it work. But as you said, you know, the more you talk to people, the logistics of it are so problematic. And then the fact that when you finish a season, which best case scenario, you'd be looking at maybe the end of April, you're going to pick up and hit training camp again the late July. It just seems, you know, we're talking about, when these decisions are being made about COVID, we're talking about mitigating risk for players. Well, there's risk in that too. So I don't want to be a naysayer on it. I think if they really genuinely said we have to play spring football, they could figure out a way to make it work to a degree. But I think you'd get such a watered down version of what football should be, with a still coming with a relatively significant amount of risk, that the reward on it is just not super high.
Last thing for you, David, is that we heard the NCAA commissioner come out and say that there will not be a championship, a fall championship. So what happens then? So we're not going to have an NCAA football championship. We're not going to crown a champion this year.
I will put it this way. Your guess is as good as mine on this. The College Football Playoff Committee, which the College Football Playoff sort of runs itself independently, and this has sort of been one of the huge problems with college football throughout this. And I think for a long time they viewed this as a asset, a feature of the system, when we're kind of seeing all the bugs that comes with it now, is that it is such a diffuse power structure that really everybody kind of gets their say, and anybody who wants to can kind of move along independently if they really want to. So, look, I think leagues can continue to hold their conference championships. Certainly nothing is stopping the AP or the USA Today coaches poll from naming a champion, as we did for years and years and years before the BCS and the College Football Playoff. And at this point, the College Football Playoff says they're going to continue to release rankings. Whether all of this adds up to a four-team playoff at the end of the year, I think largely depends on whether or not we even get to the end of the year, because I think there's certainly, I don't know if it's the most likely option, but there is certainly an option in which we kick off football in mid to late September, and by mid to late October, we've got to shut it all back down again. So I think a lot of people are saying, let's, again, just kind of continue with the plan until we've got a good reason not to follow the plan.
Wow. David, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really, really do appreciate it. A lot of insight there. Appreciate you. Enjoy the rest
problem.
Of your
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. Dancing with somebody.
Don't show up. Don't come out. I love this song. Don't stop caring. This is one of those songs when you hear it and you just like, you just, you can't, your
you're
body
listening
just
to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you on this Sunday morning here on 98.7 ESPN. One of my favorite humans on the planet joins us now. That's Rob Dibble. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Anita. How are you?
I'm doing well. I left a computer at a friend's house last night. Had to wake up early this morning. Head back into the city. That's another $16 to go through the tunnel. Other than that, I'm blessed. Healthy and working. I'm blessed. Not sure how blessed a lot of these players are on the Yankees. It looks like an infirmary is starting to, a non-COVID-19, thank God, infirmary. Judge with the calf, Stanton with the hamstring, LeMayu now with the thumb. Chapman, they're expected to get Chapman back on Monday or Tuesday. But here's my big question to you, Dibs, and that is, you know, I felt the Yankees were an outlier last year. We saw them riddled by injury, but farm system, next man up, came in and performed extremely well. We saw what they were able to do in 103 games. Would it be wise for Yankee fans to sit back and say, hey, listen, well, this happened to us last year. We're going to be fine.
I would say yes. When they were tuning up to come back, you could look at their lineups, and when you can send like a Clint Frazier back to the taxi squad team and some of these other guys that are sitting on the bench, they Tyler Wade, they've got some amazing players in the organization. And yes, you don't want to have Aaron Judge go down. LeMahieu's amazing. And Giancarlo Stanton, but they have the offense to maintain 5-6 runs a game. I mean, they're that good. When you look at Gleyber Torres, even Gardner's still around. I mean, you've got guys that can produce runs. And so Aaron Boone doesn't have to do a whole lot. He just has to make sure that the guys that are healthy can continue to get them to the postseason. Now, the postseason's different because they're going to be playing some of the best teams in baseball. And if they're healthy, it's going to be tough. But they're still one of the top run producers in the American League. I worry more about their starting rotation than the, you know, IL, because I think, you know, the pulled calf or the pulled groin or whatever, I think those guys will be ready to play at the end of September.
You mentioned Frazier and home run, 5 RBIs last night as the Yankees took care of the Boston Red Sox. What do you think it is, Dibs, that you know, like, this guy's an everyday player? They call him up when there are injuries like we're seeing right now. I understand what Gardner brings to that clubhouse as leadership, and I know how important that leadership is right now, playing in a pandemic. But just out of curiosity, if you had to go Gardner or Frazier moving forward, because there is some talk in regard to, and I feel like the past, 2 years, there's been talk, like, should the Yankees trade Frazier, what would you do moving forward? Are you looking at Frazier as your future?
Yeah, he is my future. And there's been questions about his defense over the years, and that's something, if you look at the Red Sox and Rafael Devers, Devers is terrible at third base. They need to stick that guy at a different position because he's not good at a premier position. For Clint Frazier, whether it's left field or first base, Luke Voit's over at first right now. I mean, there's a lot of positions on a baseball field, including designated hitter, where, you know, these guys are amazing. So for Clint Frazier, it's more of a, and you know this as well as I do, the best players are calm in their brain. When everybody's else's hair is on fire, they're calm. And they're trying to get Clint Frazier to get that mentality because sometimes he's just too hyper. And two, like, and so baseball IQ tells you defensively, you got to make the plays. Some plays you can't make, so you don't have to be a hero. So as long as he understands, listen, you know what? You're going to have plenty of chances to save games. You don't have to do it on every play. He'll be an everyday player. And there's a lot of guys. They need to mature baseball-wise, not mentally. I think he's a great kid. I think he wants to play. Here's my thing. He doesn't deserve to ever go back to the minor leagues. if you don't have a spot for him on your big league club, he has shown at every level of the minor leagues he can play at the major league level. I think it's not nice, or it's not right to put this guy back on the taxi squad. So he's earned the right to be a major league player with the Yankees or another ball club.
Again, Rob Dibble joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You know, you mentioned the playoffs and what a different year this is going to be in regard to the expansion and more teams being able to play. Like, so for example, I'm hearing how, you know, as we get closer to the trade deadline, like, and you talked about concerns for the rotation on the Yankees, maybe Trevor Bauer is somebody that they want to go after, but because of the expansion, the Reds still might be active and attractive to try to get into the postseason come the end of August. So everything that I'm hearing, I'm reading, I'm not expecting a lot of wheeling and dealing going on this year as we get closer to the trade deadline. Are you feeling the same?
I feel the same, but I think the Reds, because Trevor Bauer is a free agent at the end of the year, and he's going to be a great free agent, by the way, whoever gets him. You're going to trade for prospects. And that's what Brian Cashman did a few years ago, if people forget. He traded, like, I don't know, five guys and got 13 in return. And like, with the Gleyber Torres and a lot of these other great players, that return has continued to pay dividends. So if that's the way you're going to go, the Yankees are always built to win now. You know, the Red Sox are a team I could see selling off some of their parts because they have to spend a lot of money this offseason on some guys that are coming up on arbitration, coming up on free agency, and they did not want to spend the money on Mookie Betts, which I think was a disaster for the Red Sox. So, you know, like the Yankees, they're always building to win. They're always trying to build up their minor league system, which is something that they used to always trade away their minor league system to win championships, and I think Brian Cashman doesn't do that anymore. So you may not see a lot of frontline guys, but I could see you getting somebody, you know, like a Trevor Bauer, like some of these other great pitchers that are going to be on awful baseball teams, you know, come the end of August. I would get those guys and try to re-up them as New York Yankees because they'll love playing for the Yankees.
Last one for you, Dibs, before we let you go on with your Sunday. I'm assuming you're coaching some kind of little league somewhere.
I am. I'm watching one of my travel teams in the rain right now.
and that is the Cards. I don't know if people realize that the St. Louis Cardinals have only played five games. Yep. Five games, which means they have, as of right now, 11 doubleheaders. How insane is that?
Yeah, let's put it in perspective. Gerrit Cole has started more games than the Cardinals have played.
Wow.
So, it is nuts. I hear they have like 11 doubleheaders that they have to play. They're going to try to get to 55 games, which I think would be fair. So the seven-inning doubleheader stuff will help them. But it's the same. I don't think most of these Cardinal players realize golfing or going to a casino or seeing family members would have put them in dire straits like this, but it has. There's one guy on the Reds right now that's got COVID, and it shuts down not just you. It shuts down your opponent and then possibly opponents for the next week. So it's been awful. And my thing is, I think these teams should start forfeiting these games. Instead of postponing them, it's a forfeit. Because if you're a team that's doing everything right and adhering to all the protocols, why should you have to sit there and wait and wait and wait to play baseball? You should be going on to play somebody else that is COVID-free, and then the other games count as a forfeit. So at the end of the year, by percentage points, some of these teams might get in the playoffs, and you get basically screwed. And that's not fair to me.
I hear you. I hear you, Dibs. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Really do appreciate it. And appreciate you. Hopefully your travel team is winner chicken dinner today.
I hope so, too. They got a doubleheader.
Oh, imagine that. Imagina de eso.
There you go. Thank
you. Do you know what that was? Imagina de eso? Imagine that.
Imagine that.
Say it with me, Dibs. Imagina de eso.
Imagina de eso.
There you go. Imagine that.
Imagine that. Take care, Anita.
You got it, my friend. Take care. Have a great week. Anita Marks with you here on 98.7. Imagina, can you say that, Joel? Imagina de eso. Imagine that.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
on 98.7 ESPN. Anita Marks with you. Without further ado, one of the best in the business, somewhat of a brainiac. I can't even, I've worked with him now for, what, Mike, 3 years? I can't even get to tell you just how talented this young man is. And he is Mike Clay, and you see him all over ESPN, covering all things NFL and specifically fantasy football. And that's why he's on with us today to help us really make the best decisions as we prepare for our fantasy football drafts. Mike, hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I had a tea time at 1 o'clock this afternoon. I had to cancel because of the rain. Other than that, here's the thing. I try to look at the positive in everything. Maybe the weather is going to make me stay home and even prepare even more, further, more in depth for all my fantasy football drafts that are coming up in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Well, I'm playing catch up as well because I was out of, I had no electricity for 6 days last week. Oh. In fact, we were going to do this last week, right? So, and we couldn't because I didn't have power. So I'm a little behind as well, playing a little catch up, but I'm rearing up too. I'm ready to roll. We don't have much preseason football to watch. Well, we've none, obviously, but I'm really getting anxious for some football, and hopefully we'll be back on the field here in less than a month.
All right, Mike, let's dive into it, and let's go position by position, okay? I mean, obviously, we both know, you know, and I feel, and let's rewind for a second. I feel like 2 years ago, you know, we were all over Patrick Mahomes, and we were telling people, listen, wait until like the 9th, 10th, 11th round, take Patrick Mahomes as a backup. Sure enough, people who did, boom, he hit the scene and he helped a lot of people win their championship. Last year, same thing for Lamar Jackson. I was telling people, sit and wait. Wait for Lamar Jackson in round like 9 or 10, boom. They were able to do it. Lamar Jackson blew up. I think we're both in agreement here. These two guys aren't going to last past, let's say, round 2 or 3, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Right now in the high-stakes leagues, Lamar Jackson going in round 2, toward the end of round 2, Patrick Mahomes going in round 3. And I'll tell you what, I actually did an auction yesterday, and the prices on those two were higher than the top quarterbacks went for last season, right? And that may be a little surprising, but I think that the reason for that is that we feel a little better about them. Like Patrick Mahomes only did it for one season, and we still thought he was great, right? But we didn't know for sure how much he would regress to the mean. I think now we feel pretty good that he is a very, very high floor and is pretty much a shoo-in to be a top-scoring quarterback. And then Lamar Jackson, he does so much with his legs, right? He's already a record setter with his legs. That gives you a very high floor in fantasy. So, look, both of those guys are pretty safe bets, but you're going, there's going to be opportunity costs. You're going to miss out at players at other positions. So I've been kind of passing on them and looking for maybe the next great quarterback. And that, I mean, there's one logical choice there, right? It would be Kyler Murray, who you can get in the 7th round of drafts now. First overall pick last season, and obviously a candidate to make his second-year leap. And Cliff Kingsbury's second-year coaching that offense. They add DeAndre Hopkins. A lot of their other supporting actors in that offense are entering their second season. So really a lot to like about Kyler Murray, and he's certainly been on my radar.
So I guess that's my question to you is Kyler Murray, is that the quarterback this season that you could sit back and hope that he falls to you in a lower round and grab him, as opposed to, because, you know, each and every year, you know, we have the fantasy football marathon, and that's the topic of discussion. You know what I mean? At what point in time do you take a quarterback? Do you wait until the later rounds? So is that the best strategy this year, is to wait for Murray?
I think so, especially because he's not as expensive as maybe I thought he would be, right? So round 7's not too bad at all. That's right where Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson are going. So I'm perfectly fine doing that. But if you want to wait even longer, I mean, if we're talking who is the next best likely breakout, it's probably Daniel Jones, right? I mean, he looked pretty good. In fact, if you ignore week 1 last season when he didn't play the whole game, he actually averaged more fantasy points per game than Kyler Murray did, you know, and obviously there was ups and downs. The inefficiencies were there, but he added a lot of value with his legs. There were a lot of highs. He had a lot of really high scoring games. He's entering his second season. Obviously there's the early first round pedigree. Jones, Barkley, Kate Shepard, Slayton and Ingram played 0 games together last season. And this was a borderline top 10 scoring offense. So, again, if you want to wait even longer and wait until the double-digit rounds, that's where you can get a guy like Daniel Jones and take that shot.
Interesting. So in a pandemic season, learning a new offense like Jason Garrett's, you're still buying it to Daniel Jones this season?
Yeah, again, he's not going to cost you a lot, right? I mean, if we were talking sixth, seventh round, you know, in that area, maybe I'm a little more concerned. But, I mean, again, at that point, you already filled out your starting lineup. You can have some fun, you know, throw darts at any position. But Jones is certainly one of the few guys who can make a gigantic leap in his second season. So I have no issues with that.
What are your thoughts on, like, so some guys that, like Philip Rivers, for example? I think the Colts is a perfect fit for him. Arguably, what, top five, top three offensive line he's going to be playing behind now. There are weapons there. He's going to be playing indoors. I'm expecting a solid season from Philip Rivers. Are you?
You know what? I like him as a player, and I think he's an upgrade for that offense. I think the Colts win that division, but I don't think he'll be a good fantasy quarterback because he really never has. I mean, he's been playing in the warmth of San Diego and Los Angeles. He's put up big passing numbers, but he hasn't been a good fantasy quarterback. In fact, he hasn't finished the season better than eighth in fantasy points since 2013, believe it or not. Has only one top 10 during that span. The reason? He does nothing with his legs, and he throws a lot of interceptions. In fact, last season I was comparing Baker Mayfield to him. I thought he was going to have the same issues, and that's exactly what happened, right? Last year, Baker, obviously he struggled a little bit more with efficiency than we expected, but I turned it over way too much and did nothing with his legs and was not a good fantasy quarterback. So same kind of thing there. These guys don't stand out as much in fantasy because there's so many athletic quarterbacks now adding value with their legs, and that's just huge in fantasy football. So that's what concerns me. That's why I have Rivers actually right around 20th in my ranking.
All right, let's talk about running backs. Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, Derrick Henry. Rank those four for me.
Let's see. I think I got all four, but I think there's a top tier. I think there's a pretty clear top tier, right? So it's McCaffrey, Barkley, Zeke, Kamara, and Cook, right? That's your big five. You know, if you're in an auction, they're going to get all the money. If you're in a season long, they're going to be the first five guys off the board, barring a Cook holdout, which it doesn't seem like that's going to happen now. So those are the big five. Then you get down to that next tier, right, where you get to Henry and Edwards-Helaire and Miles Sanders, that kind of group. But honestly, Anita, I think you kind of have that big five, but really I think it's a tier of 14 running backs this season. There's 14 guys that I really feel pretty comfortable with, and I want two of them ideally if I'm picking in the mid to late stages of the first round. Now, if you can get to, if you're picking early and you take a McCaffrey or Barkley and one of those guys falls like a Jacobs or Mixon or Eckler, that's fantastic, but it's a little tough because running backs are going so fast in draft this season.
All right, a question I want to throw your way as well. We had a caller called in not too long ago, and we were talking about second-year running backs, right? Miles Sanders, Josh Jacobs, Montgomery, Singletary, guys like that. Give me your top three. Who are your top three running backs that are entering their second year that you like?
Yeah, that's interesting. An interesting cutoff point because I think they're in groups, right? They're in tiers. So Sanders and Jacobs are unquestionably the first tier, right? They are both part of that top 14 I just talked about. I like Sanders the most. You know, he should get a pretty generous chunk of the carries in that Eagles offense. And also keep in mind, he caught 50 balls and he was second at running back in yards per target last season, right? So he's going to be a threat as a rusher and receiver. Should be going in the first round of most drafts. And then Jacobs, of course, they're saying they're going to throw to him more. We'll see, but a super effective rusher as a rookie, a decent offensive line there as well. So they're the 1-2 punch there. If you had Jacobs ahead of Sanders, fine. You know, I'm not going to argue with you. I think he's a tremendous talent as well. And then, you know, you have to work your way down a little bit further. You know, I'm a big Zach Moss fan, so makes me a little nervous about Devin Singletary, but he was really good, really efficient in that Bills offense last season. So he would be next on my board, but he's at 22. That gives him a slight edge over, say, David Montgomery, who would be fourth, and even Darrell Henderson, who at this point you can get in the double-digit rounds.
Interesting. All right, is there a sleeper running, before we move on to wide receivers, is there a sleeper running back that you feel that, you know, you're going to grab and you feel that you want on every single one of your rosters this year, Mike?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the guy I've been taking a lot, and again, I can list off a whole bunch of guys here that should be on your radar in the later rounds, but how about Damian Harris in New England? I mean, if they come out against Miami in week one, don't be surprised if he gets 15 carries and three or four targets. I mean, that shouldn't surprise no one, and the reason is Sony Michel doesn't look like he's going to play early in the season. In fact, he might start on the PUP list and miss almost half the season, and if that's the case, why would they not give their day two pick from last season, an opportunity to run with that first, that number one job. Now, they did sign Lamar Miller. You know, he tore his ACL last season. We'll see how much of a role he'll have. Rex Burkhead's there. James White is back. So there's still a lot of mouths to feed. But, you know, at the same time, even in this crowded backfield, we were seeing Sony Michel at times push for 20 carries, right? So Harris, I think, will get the first shot at that role. And right now he's going in the 15th round of draft. So go for it. Take a shot. And who knows, the Patriots may even pivot to a super run-heavy offense this season. That, you know, their personnel movements suggest that may be the case. So I'm definitely liking Harris in the last couple of rounds.
All right, let's move to wide receivers. Is it Michael Thomas and then everybody else heading into this season?
Yeah, I mean, Michael Thomas, I think about how much Christian McCaffrey dominated at running back last season. Well, that's how much Michael Thomas dominated at wide receiver, just about. I mean, he scored 99 more points than any other wide receiver. So absolutely, I think once those big five running backs are off the board, that's your kind of your green flag, your opportunity to jump on Michael Thomas.
All right. Give us some sleeper wide receivers that you like coming into this season.
Sleepers. I think that we have a lot of these rookies that really jump off the page, right? So, they're kind of big names, but at the same time, some of them are going undrafted, right? I mean, Brandon Ayuk's going in the last couple of rounds. His stock is kind of on the rise right now because of the injury to Deebo Samuel. My point being, any of those rookies that were drafted in the first two rounds are fine. But how about a second-year guy, right? A guy that I compared to perhaps this year's DJ Chark, who I loved last year, Paris Campbell in the Colts offense, right? Again, a day-two pick last season. He's a little bit different than Chark in that he plays in the slot. He's a little smaller, or quite a bit smaller, but he's very fast. He missed over half of his rookie season due to injury, but the guy can do it all. He's going to carry the ball. He's going to see a lot of short area targets from Phillip Rivers. He'll probably help out a little bit as a returner. And again, there's opportunity in this high ball, what probably will be a higher volume Colts pass offense with Phillip Rivers there. Remember, he doesn't scramble at all. Everything's going to be a throw when they call a pass. And that's going to add up to volume for these guys. So Paris Campbell's, I think, a terrific breakout candidate. And again, going in the 14th round right now. So very cheap. And there's a possibility this guy works his way into starting lineups pretty fast.
I love DJ Moore coming into this season. And I think Terry McLaurin is just going to get a ton of targets, regardless of who the quarterback's going to be, right?
No doubt. I mean, Washington right now is pretty devoid offensively. And, you know, this could be a recording from last season, right? I mean, same kind of thing. At this point, we didn't even know if McLaurin was going to start week one because there was so much confusion in that offense. But he proved in week one against Philadelphia to be the real deal. I'm a big fan of his talent. Again, their top tight end is going to be Logan Thomas. Most likely he's a converted quarterback who's mostly been a backup throughout his career. The other wide receivers are Antonio Gandy-Golden, a day-three rookie, Steven Sims in the slot, Trey Quinn, Cody Lattimore, if he's not suspended, Dontrell Inman. Those are the kind of guys that are going to be aligning at wide receiver and tight end. So it should be the Terry McLaurin show. A big fan of him. Great speed. Obviously a hit for that team in the draft last season. So I'm with you on Terry McLaurin.
All right, looking at the tight ends, I'm looking at this season, Mike. Curious if you're thinking the same, where it's like it's the have and the have-nots. Like there's really no middle class here. Is this the year that you reach for, and maybe you draft sooner a Kelce, a Kittle, or an Andrews, even a Zach Ertz? Which I'm a little concerned about Ertz because I think this is the year that Goddard takes an even bigger step. As a tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles. But is this a year that you're reaching for a tight end, Mike?
I don't think so. I'll tell you what. A couple months ago, I thought that my strategy this season would be to wait until the double-digit rounds and go after that tier. And that tier would be potential breakout players like Noah Fant and T.J. Hockenson, right? First-round picks last season. Fant was already tight end 16 as a 21-year-old rookie. He should make a leap this season. I love him as a late-round target. Again, Hockenson, same thing year two. Hayden Hurst goes to this Atlanta offense. He should be a high-floor sort of player. If you go even deeper, Chris Herndon, maybe Mike Gesicki if you like him. There's a lot of options. The problem is there's been values, right? I'm constantly staring at my board, like, how is Zach Ertz available in the fifth or sixth round? And right, you just touched on maybe a concern with Ertz, but it shows up in his ADP, right? He's falling, and still this guy's been a top four tight end in targets, receptions, yards, fantasy points, four consecutive seasons. So I still like him at his price point. In that tier also are Mark Andrews and even Darren Waller, who is falling to the sixth round. So I think there are quite a few tiers where there's values, and that's why I've kind of talked myself out of Kelce and Kittle, because, you know, in round two, there's so much talent at running back and wide receiver that I want to attack those spots, and knowing that a little bit later I'll have opportunities for values at tight end.
Mike, great stuff as always. Really do appreciate your time and your insight and helping our listeners as everybody's starting to get ready for their fantasy football drafts. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday with your beautiful family, my friend.
You too, Anita. Take care.
You got it. Mike Clay, make sure you follow him. He's just really, really absolutely brilliant.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.